It's another thrilling episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm Neil Rosen, joined as always by Bill Brigoli.
Hi there.
Bill McCuddy.
That's me.
And our guest this week is from Collider, Perry Nemiroff. Hi, Perry.
Hello there.
You All may right. know her from her quote in the new movie Eddie the Eagle on television screens nationwide right
Which
now.
Which we will be talking about that movie. What was your quote, Perry?
I wish I knew what that quote was.
That's
I
the think, sad part. I think That's one, how the studio system works.
I think I did see one that might have said, it was a one-word quote.
And no,
I
no, this was a sentence like standout of the year or something.
Oh,
like,
if it was the sentence, I believe it was this will make you want to stand up and cheer.
Amazing.
The key word is want. I did not stand up and cheer, but I might have wanted to stand up.
So they called her and said, will you say, would it make stand up and cheer? Seriously. And they just,
yeah,
and
let's get into quotes in a minute. Let me just tell everybody what's on the show.
Yeah, please do, because they're at the editor's seat.
The Hugh Jackman movie. We'll talk about that first. We'll talk about Race, another Olympic-themed movie. We'll talk about other Olympic-themed movies that are available on demand and on DVD. We'll talk about Room, which is now on DVD and on demand.
Best movie of the year.
Youth and a new horror film called Spotlight. Southbound. We'll check in. This is the final show that we're taping before the Oscars. Yeah. We'll see if anybody changed their opinions on the major categories.
So if you're listening to this after the Oscars, you know that Revenant won and Brie Larson won.
Revenant's
example.
Not going to win. We're going to talk about that later. And we're going to talk about quotes, which is interesting. I'd like to talk about that. But first, let's talk about Eddie the Eagle. Okay, so Eddie the Eagle is based on the true story. Actually, you know what?
Which I didn't know about. Did you know about that story, Neil?
I had no idea about that story.
But everybody's talking about how they remember it. Do you?
Yeah.
Bill does.
Yeah, I remember it was 1988.
Yeah.
It was in Calgary, and I had friends covering the Olympics in Calgary, so I remember hearing about it. And it was a big deal. And why were those sports? He was sort of like the color feature, you know, when they're doing.
Was he the agony of defeat at the beginning every week?
It's interesting that you mentioned the agony. Well, first of all, before we even get into this, Eddie the Eagle is about the true life story of this of Eddie Edwards. He's depicted as a nerdy guy. He had leg braces when he was a child.
I've seen pictures of the guy. Rock Hudson.
He dreamed of being in Olympics. That was what he was obsessed
Perry
about.
Perry Rock
being
Hudson was an actor in the 50s.
I was waiting for you to come out with that.
And somehow he managed to get on the ski team.
Well, they didn't have one, is how he managed to get on it.
Because England. In England.
Yeah, right.
But they said that he wasn't going to the Olympics because he wasn't from the right background and upbringing and standing and whatever. So he found a way in by becoming a ski jumper, where they hadn't had a ski jumper in the UK in, they had no.
1923 or something?
It was like 30 years. Something.
Right. And they didn't want to fund the team, but he goes out and follows his dream. And he gets this washed up alcoholic guy played by Hugh Jackman to be the his mentor, trainer. By the way, and it's the true story of how he tackles this the ski jumping thing. You said the agony of defeat. There's a lot of great scenes in this of people falling on their head and falling on their ass and jumping off.
That's what happens when you jump.
Right, and jumping off the ski lift. And I actually thought of that while I was watching it. It was that. ABC
Iconic,
Wild
yeah.
World of Sports, yeah. You know, the thrill of victory and
the agony of
defeat. They would always show
you. Spiro Agnew of defeat.
They would show you a ski jumper jumping off, doing a ski jump and falling on and falling down. And although those were really horrific things to look at, on those agony of defeat ABC Wild World of Sports things, the shots in this movie were really like, the guy lands on his head.
You know, the only difference between this and any other sport is just you have to have the balls to do it. There's just no two ways around it. If you don't do it right, you die. And they say that through the movie a lot, but it's such a happy-go-lucky kind of upbeat movie. The guy never really does take a bad enough tumble that he can't do anything. I don't know about the real guy, but it's just guts. It's pure going to the top and saying okay and leaning forward.
Well, I think it's also important to stress that like he might not have gotten on the ski team for whatever it was, downhill skiing, but he was still like an adequate skier. He was like an above average skier where he was able to compete, and he did well as a kid. He just didn't make the list to be on the Olympic team.
I got
to
tell you, I had a lump in my throat through the whole movie. It's terribly cliched and way on the money, and it's just
so formula.
But as I've said often on the show, when formula works, I like it, and it really works in this.
It's, you know, formula, we're talking about, but insanely well done formula.
We were talking about Perry's quote. My quote would be, if you see one movie about an English ski jumper all year,
they'd be crazy not to use that.
So I'm not as in love with it. You loved the film.
I loved it. I just walked out so incredibly happy, and we all need movies like that.
I took
our lives.
My 15-year-old daughter, and she felt the same way. And I know you said on the show it's really for families, but I'd have gone by myself. It's,
right. So this is the after show.
I wouldn't
show.
Seek it out, nor I.
As I say. Go ahead, yes.
Well, I wouldn't have looked in the paper and said, oh, I must go see Eddie the Eagle. But I think it's fine for any age.
As I say every week, this is the after show to a television program that we do on New York One locally in New York and nationally on Time Warner Cable called Talking Pictures. And I did say on the show, which I'm going to say again here, is that, yes, it's cliched and it's a predictable formula film. And all the villains are painted in black and white. I mean, even the father, who's a plasterer, you know, goes, now, what are you wasting your time being a ski with this Olympic nonsense, you know, join me in the plastering business. And even after the kid makes the Olympic team, he's like, you're still doing this craziness? You know, everybody's like this mustache twirling, you know, kind of villainy.
Snidely Whiplash kind of guy.
Yeah, exactly. A Snidely Whiplash kind of character. And even the guy who, on the British Olympic Committee, who doesn't let the guy go, he's just such an evil guy. No matter what this guy, Eddie Edwards, accomplishes, it's like, no, we don't want you on the team. You know, it's just... But I don't think it's a movie for adults. I think it's a movie for families. And for families, I think it has an uplifting message, because if you take a kid there, you can walk out of the film like you did, Perry, and say, you know, like, despite the naysayers, despite people telling you you can't accomplish this, believe in yourself, believe in your dreams. Don't listen to the, you know, people that say you can't do something. If you believe in yourself, give it a shot and give it your all.
So your quote for Perry on television would have been, don't believe the naysayers. Go see Eddie.
I don't think they would have picked up that quote, you know what I mean? Plus, I have to tell you, I thought that Christopher Walken's in this movie.
For five seconds.
And the screening that I go to, you know, he walks on screen towards the end of the movie, and the audience just starts laughing.
Yeah, at my screening, too.
And it's not it's not a comedy performance. It's a serious performance. Is it just because
it's actually a hug he's going to give with they reconcile? But he's also in a studio earlier in the movie.
Well, is it just that Christopher Walken has been on SNL so many times and has just done, you know, his unique voice?
I swear to God,
movies,
I almost, when he said, he says in the movie,
I wrote this book I need you to, you know.
And he also says to this co-announcer, he goes, you know what this kid needs? And I almost yelled, more cowbell. In the theater, but I was with my daughter.
I was wrong about you not being in the... I mean, I think it's just when he opens his mouth, he can't do a serious role. Everybody just starts laughing. You see him as the... What was that character he played on SNL?
The Continental.
The Continental, yes. Thank you, the Continental.
Welcome to my apartment. It's beautiful up here.
Right. What do you think of this movie?
It was so formula, and I kept wishing maybe just do something a little different. They didn't. They kept it pretty much exactly the way you expect it to go, just like a ski lift. It's going to go up,
well,
it's going to go down, and that's it.
The whole ski jumping as a sport kind of brought a fresh flavor to it, especially how they shoot it. It's like you think looking up the ramp and how tall it is would get old after a while, but still they managed to frame the shot from down below and from up above and cover him coming down the ramp in a way that really does make each one feel bigger.
It was shot really well, and it's also from the perspective of him jumping.
You see what that looks like, the tips of the skis,
you know, like what it would look like. It kind of put you in the air with the guy.
Absolutely.
This guy who plays Eddie Edwards.
He was in The Kingsman.
He was.
Taron Egerton plays him with such naivete. It's almost like Forrest Gump. It's kind of like when this beautiful, sexy barkeep that he's working in this bar, older woman comes on to him. He's like a deer in the headlights. I thought this was a little too unrealistic. But I don't know, you know.
I watched some interviews with the real guy after just because I was curious, and he seems to have nailed it from the little bit I saw.
All right, I don't know the guy. But you asked a question earlier, Bill, had I ever heard of this? No, but apparently in Britain, this guy is a household name. Like, everybody knows this story.
Yeah. Like Cato Kaelin.
Okay, so here's another Olympic film. So my last word on this is that it's hokey, but I'm giving it a pass as a family film, and Perry loves it, and Bill thinks it. What did you say on the TV show today? It's the best, worst?
Yeah, it's the worst, best movie of the year. I mean, it's...
yeah, I agree with Bill.
Okay. And
everyone does.
And it's not made by Disney, but it's just like a Disney film, even though it's technically not a Disney film. All right, so here's a movie that none of us saw except for
Audience, if you're paying attention, mm-hmm. that was the last word from Neil on that movie, okay. And now we're moving on to a new topic.
And now we're going to move on to another movie, which none of us saw, but I'm glad that Perry saw it. So it's all yours, Perry. Let's talk about another movie that takes place in the Olympics.
That it does.
This one with Jesse Owens.
Jesse Owens.
It's so called it's called Race.
Yeah, so it takes place during the 1936 Olympics in Berlin?
Yeah, 36.
Wow,
yeah.
I can't believe I remember that. But the movie highlights Jesse's rise from, you know, going to college and then making his way to the Olympics. And it's also very much about the Nazi regime and how all of that paired together. And I didn't like this movie at all. And I like parts of it, though. Well, in the beginning, the hard thing with it is that half of the movie is about Jesse Owens, half of the movie is about what's going on with the Nazis and the U.S. Olympic Committee, and they're so incredibly separate, and then the only reason they come together in the end is because Jesse goes to the Olympics, and they just never really dig deep into that idea at all.
So the movie, having not seen it, so and not knowing really, I know that Jesse Owens, you know, the story that I grew up with was that Hitler wouldn't shake Jesse Owens' hand or something after he won the thing. So is there an actor playing Adolf Hitler in the movie?
Yeah, and obviously it hits that point in his story, but it doesn't really mean very much.
Is it too lifetimey? Is it too, like, kind of not?
It's formulaic and in a bad way, where it feels like, not. I don't want to say that Jason Sudeikis gave a bad performance, but, you know, when you see him with the hat on and, like, you know, given that kind of
Jason
voice.
Jason Sudeikis he just looks like he's in an SNL sketch or doing something on.
It felt like they were all playing dress-up to me.
Yeah, it didn't. That was the impression I got.
This movie also doesn't do nearly as good a job as Eddie the Eagle or Cool Runnings as explaining the sport and what it takes to actually train to be good at the sport. It's like, let's do a montage of him running in circles and winning races. And like, that's how he got to the Olympics.
So there's and I guess I didn't know this. I guess from what you're saying, was there a big debate as with the U.S. Olympic Committee as to whether or not we should send a team to Berlin to those Olympics?
Yes. And William Hurt, I think, plays the head of the Olympic Committee in that part. And like, he is like a snooze in this movie. He looks so bored in every one of his scenes.
So what?
And then we have Jeremy Irons plays the guy
Avery
who they
Brundage,
actually
right.
they send to
sends with him
to Germany to negotiate the situation.
Like the Bridge of Spies.
He was great. I would have liked an entire movie based on what he was up to.
And did
he's a great actor.
Did we field a whole like bunch of? Did we just send the track and field team, or did we send? Did we like go in the all in with all different sports?
Javelin,
to the yeah
shot
exactly put. All the he, things.
They were negotiating jump. On behalf. Half of like the entire, it wasn't just a matter of Jesse Owens' situation.
Right, it was whether or not the United States should participate.
As a whole, yes.
I wonder what made them participate.
They came up with, I don't want to spoil
right,
any
so,
of the
right,
little
so watch
details
the movie,
for
guess,
Jeremy.
Or don't. You're not recommending the movie.
It's a little bit of a tricky situation. It's not like a clear-cut
but
deal.
I have sound.
You've spoken to these people. Okay.
I've spoken. And Stefan James, who plays... Actually, Stefan James was not the first choice to play Jesse James, I found. Jesse Owens. He was not the first choice. It was actually the guy who went out to do Star Wars, Boyega.
Huh. No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. He left this film. I'm going to do this thing called Star Wars.
What a major career mistake for him. Said no one ever.
Stefan, who got stuck with the role, actually talked about he was working on another movie while he had to start training to run as Jesse.
2 months prior to filming, I was in Georgia, filming in Atlanta, and I would just, on my off days, filming, I would just be training to play Jesse. So I would go down to Georgia Tech and hang out with the track and field coaches there, and they would train me basically twice a day, and I had to learn how to not only run fast, but then to run like Jesse.
And I have one more clip of him, and he talks about playing an icon.
You know, there's a little bit of pressure there when you're trying to make sure that you do him justice, you do his family justice. And then all the people who care so much about him and his legacy, to make sure that I'm doing that justice, too. So there's a lot that goes into it.
So this movie didn't do very well, did it?
It got dumped here. Look, if it's called Race, it's the Oscars so white year. If this had been an important movie, Black History, yeah. But if this had been a good movie, Hollywood would have been behind it like 150% this month. With all of the controversy going on out there, no one was saying a peep about this movie. And I knew it was in trouble.
It also probably got, like, crushed by Deadpool. Nobody's talking about anything but Deadpool.
I love Deadpool.
A lot of people love Deadpool. That movie made an insane amount of money. It's no wonder there wasn't money to go around.
We haven't talked about Deadpool.
Didn't we do Deadpool on the show, Bergoglio?
Yeah, we did talk about Deadpool.
Yes, we did. We did do Deadpool.
I haven't seen it. That's why maybe I wasn't
so that's
in
you have to pay attention. Yeah. But
sorry, are you Neil?
Well, you know, it was a very weird promotional thing that they did with Race on Jeopardy. The categories are, and the last category, all the way on the right-hand side of the board, it was either regular Jeopardy or Double Jeopardy, was Race, and it was not written in their regular typeface. They had the logo from Race, and each clue was a video clue where a star or somebody from the movie would be on the set, and they would be giving you a clue about, you know, in 1936, Jesse Owens won this many medals for, you know, so
on the board on Jeopardy, you're saying they played the race card?
Wow, that was very quick and very good. But what I'm saying is, yeah, they dumped it in theaters, but they did try to do some promotion, as unconventional as it was, by going on Jeopardy. I don't know if that's the audience that they really go. That's the target demographic. But all right, so
most of those people are alive during that.
So. Well, anyway, you know, there's a bunch of other Olympic-themed movies that are on demand. Rudy, which I think is better than Eddie the Eagle, somehow it was more involved in Rudy, you know? I mean, I just think it was less formulaic and just pulled at my heartstrings more, and it's also a true story, and I don't know, that whole Sean Astin wanting to play
on
Notre
Dame. English people in general. We've talked about that off the show.
No, I don't hate English people. I just think that, do you like Chariots of Fire? There's an Olympic movie that's
I like it a lot. I don't love it.
I only remember the music.
Perry was saying that on the show today, yeah. Because it's 1981,
it
so
now.
It's well before even her birth, and she remembers the iconic score.
You're 19
that won,
now? How old are you, Perry?
We got to get their parents' permission for her to be in here.
Right. I wish.
I'm sure we're violating labor laws. She's been here all day. It's turned into room. It's like a hostage situation for you. If you had a small child, we'd be wondering when you're going to escape.
This got awkward.
Chariots of Fire is a fine movie. It's dated a little bit. Hugh Hudson, who made it, never went on to make anything else much. He did the Greystoke thing a couple of years later. So it's kind of a cool anomaly for that reason. But it has the same kind of actually Jewish storyline and Christian storyline. And, you know, it's gorgeous at the opening and closing when they're running along the ocean, which is kind of cool.
I always thought it was a decent movie. I never thought it was a great movie. I didn't think Chariots of Fire was worthy of winning the Academy Award for Best Picture. For a movie about running, it's rather slow and sluggish. I did like the religion component to it, the fact that the Christian runner was running because he felt it was a mandate from God, and the Jewish runner was running because he wanted to show that Jews weren't an inferior race physically. So I like that aspect of it. But a lot of it just is draggy. I think it's a good movie. I don't think it's, you know, a best picture, but it did win the best picture, you know?
Yeah, okay. And the Italian runner was running time.
I almost appreciated that it was a little slow, especially when we're getting movies like Eddie the Eagle and like some of the more modern inspiring sports movies where it follows a very specific formula and it is very quick and we get those crazy montages where all of a sudden they're really good at their sports. I kind of appreciated something that was a little more conversation.
The training montage, just like the falling in love montage.
Who mentioned Cool Runnings? Did you mention somebody?
I talked about Cool Runnings.
Yeah, there's another Olympic movie.
I love that movie.
Do you like that movie, Bergoglio?
That's another one I barely remember, to be honest with you. It was nice. It was fun.
I grew up watching that movie and watching it. Like, I have the VHS tape, and it just stayed in the VHS player and would just rewind, start again, rewind, start again. I could probably recite about half of that movie still to this day.
It was John Candy's second-to-last movie. We reported on the show that it was his last movie, but actually my friend Michael Moore made a movie called Canadian Bacon with him after that. So it's second last movie. He's kind of he's good, and he's kind of at the peak of his sort of comedic. Plug John Candy in, and you'll get a reliable output. And he's really strong in the film.
The
so.
Thing that I like about Cool Runnings, I mean, you know, yeah, it's like over the top humor, and it's kind of like a one note joke kind of thing. But that joke does work. I mean, it's amazing that in Jamaica, a tropical island, that they fielded a bobsled thing. I mean, that's just pretty nuts unto itself, you
it's
know?
It's a one-joke thing.
Can
but
it sustain a whole
done,
movie?
It's done in, like, a way that's not mean-spirited. It's not, like, making fun of them the entire movie. It's you're kind of in the situation with them, and, like, you're part of that journey to overcome it and to prove themselves, which is why the ending is so inspiring.
And I think Neil likes it because there are no English people in it who
oh,
we've
yeah,
already
probably.
Established he hates.
The Swiss are fine.
Oh, that's funny. All right, before we move on, what do you think's the what's your favorite sports movie of all time? Do you have a favorite sports movie or one of your all-time favorite sports
movies? Well, my all-time favorite movie for a long, long time, it was Raging Bull. So, I mean, as a sports movie, that's not really a competitive.
Well, I guess that would count.
And I'll tell you what, you know what? This is a really weird one because it was on the other day on TCM. I'm flipping around. I always watch a movie called Grand Prix in 1966 with James Garner and Eva Marie Saint, which is and Yves Montand, which is a horrible movie off the track, but on the track. John Schlesinger had put the, or Frankenheimer, put the cameras like right on the road. And it's really breathtaking and amazing. Those are two odd sports for a favorite sports movie. But
mine is very offbeat. I like
Waterboy. I know. You love the
Hey, I love the, that's not my, you know, it's funny. I wasn't going to say the Waterboy, but for a comedy movie.
No, it's a good movie.
We can't drink just water. That's a really funny movie. No, the one
no,
I'm going
Dodgeball
with
is of course, what you're doing.
Dodgeball is very funny too, right? You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. No, it is A League of Their Own, which is the, that movie, I could watch it over and over and over again. I mean, you know, which is, if you've never seen the movie, check it out. It's about the men went off to fight in World War II, they created a women's baseball league.
With no English people, which is what you love about it.
I love English people. With Gina Davis is in it, and
Madonna.
Madonna is in it.
Rosie O'Donnell's
in it, yeah. And Gary Marshall.
Laurie Petty is great in it.
Yeah. Gary Marshall's in it, and David Strathairn.
Yeah.
And it's
there's
just
no crying in baseball.
With Tom Hanks. How could we forget? Tom Hanks is the alcoholic coach who's given this like really demotion to coach this women's baseball team, and it's terrific. You like
that was the one that, if you were to ask me, my favorite.
Penny
one,
Marshall.
Penny Marshall directed that. That's my favorite too. So
look at that.
See?
And that's something.
We
you know what Gary comment. Marshall, who's in that movie? Do you know what his favorite sports movie is of all time?
No.
I can't do an imitation of Gary Marshall, but he told me The Pride of the Yankees. He likes he likes The Pride of the Yankees. What were you got?
I actually think that's my favorite. But
Pride of the Yankees?
No.
League of their own.
League of their own.
Three out of four people.
Yeah.
What are the odds on that?
Yeah.
The odds are
just wrote about it
didn't happen.
Recently,
they're just agreeing
too.
With you. If you've just joined us, it's the Neil Rosen Suck Up Show.
No, come on, come on. All right, so let's move on to some things that are coming out on demand and on DVD this week. One being Room, which
best movie of the year.
And it's your favorite movie of the year.
If you're listening to this after the Oscars,
so we'll all
you
just agree
that,
with you now.
You know that Brie Larson has. Yeah, that's more makes more sense than
if you're listening to the after the Oscars, and we taped this in all full disclosure before the Oscars. We're all agreeing that Brie Larson is going to win. Yes, best actress. Yeah, that's kind
and
of
the Revenant.
Given.
What a surprise that was, because the idiots picked Spotlight, and
we'll get into that in a minute. Room, great. You want to talk about Room?
I'm obsessed with Room. I loved the book first, and I had a really hard time imagining how they would adapt that book. So the whole book is told from the kid's perspective, and like, how do you really do that with a 5-year-old kid in a big movie? But I think they incorporated the narration and Jacob Tremblay's performance, and the way that Lenny Abramson shoots him, it almost tells the story from his perspective without having the kid narrate the entire thing from start to finish. But I think this movie is fantastic for a million reasons.
It's a great movie, and Jason.
Was it on your top 10, Highness?
Was it on my top 10? I don't remember. Oh, you tell me. Was it on my top 10, Bill? I don't know. It's a great movie.
I know if it had been called English Room, it wouldn't have been on your top 10.
I don't know.
No, come on. It's a great film.
It's a great film. I'm not saying it's a good... Jason Tremblay got robbed of an Oscar nomination. He gave one of the best performances.
Because your friend Robert Wall won't vote for anybody who's under 35.
He was like 6 years old when he shot the movie. It was one of the best performances all year. He doesn't get a nomination. And a lot of people didn't make a lot of money at the box office. And I think a lot of people got turned off to it because, you know, it sounds really depressing. I mean, it's like, you know.
So did 12 Years a Slave. And they went to that and they voted for it.
This woman is like,
I'm sorry,
you know,
they voted for
kidnapped
it.
Kidnapped for 7 years and she's in a room. And, you know, then there's, it's kind of like an escape, the great escape tale, you know. But I think, you know, don't be put off by the subject matter because, you know, it actually manages to be, you know, and I don't want to tip off what happens, but it manages to be hopeful and uplifting towards the end. And Joan Allen is really good. And William H. Macy is really good, too.
Seamus the dog.
Yeah.
That might be my favorite scene in the whole movie.
And, you know, in the process, you'll be very moved by this movie.
It's put out by one of the reasons a whole lot of people haven't heard about it, it's put out by a very small company that decided to release it very, very, very slowly. So
one room at a time.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Well,
A24
is
recently had their biggest
waves.
Opening. Yeah, because they had The Witch last week, which did really well.
Well, they need it. Well, maybe now they'll make money and they could promote some of their good films.
Bill, your side about the voting process, though, is telling because you mentioned Robert Wall as a joke. He was on our show a couple months ago and he said, I only vote for my friends and I never vote for kids. And a lot of the voting in Hollywood is for their friends. And so one of the things we're going to talk about maybe, especially in the sports vernacular, is whether or not there could be an upset for Sylvester Stallone.
Mm.
He's a lock.
You
want to do the Oscar thing now? We'll do the Oscar thing now. Okay, so the Oscars are this Sunday. We're taping this podcast on Tuesday. So let's go. Okay, we all agree Brie Larson's going to win Best Actress.
Yeah.
We all agree that Leonardo DiCaprio is going to win Best Actor.
Probably, although Bryan Cranston is the beloved one there. And if it really does just
You want to make that our bet?
Mm-hmm. No. Bill and I have a bet every year that he always welches on. Well, one of us does.
Welches on. I've won like the last 8 years in a row.
Yeah, that's what I mean. it's possible that I'm hearing Bryan Cranston's name a lot this week out there.
Well, I think Leo is the lock. Leo?
Probably, but I hope there's a spoiler somewhere. I don't know
Leo.
What category.
Leo, you going with Leo?
Yeah, Leo.
Okay, I'm going
out.
With Best Supporting Actress. I'm going with Alicia Vikander for Danish Girl, even though it'll be kind of like honoring her Ex Machina performance as well.
I'm agreeing, except that that's two ingenues if we agree on Brie Larson, and the Oscars only gives it once. I'm telling you,
so
every
who you
year.
Think, who do you think they're going to go with?
I like Vikander also.
Yeah,
but
probably.
I can't Rooney Mara could be the upset.
If anyone's the upset, I hope it's Kate Winslet.
I think Vikander and Best Supporting Actor. I think that's one of the locks of the evening. Sylvester Stallone. No, that's the John Wayne Lifetime Achievement.
Two words: Lauren Bacall.
Lauren Bacall.
She was absolutely locked and loaded for The Mirror Has Two Faces, I think it was called. And that was the year Juliette Binoche won for The English Patient.
I think it's Stallone.
Ever
and I'm
to
sad
happen.
To see it being Stallone, actually, because I don't, as I've said on this podcast, I certainly said it on the television show, it's the same performance that he's given in the last, like, seven Rocky films. Rocky and Rocky
There's
Balboa.
Wrong with that. We've
but
always
why,
said this is a
why
career.
Why all of a sudden honor this one?
It's a career.
I mean, if you look
award.
At the Rocky Balboa, he's at the gravesite talking to Adrian, going in the last one is in this one, you know, like, oh, man, they didn't deliver the lamb chops, Adrian, into restaurant today. I mean, you know, it's the same
right.
deal,
but that's the,
you
what's
know?
What's wrong with that?
Who did Robert Wall vote for?
Henry
Fonda. Yeah, let's call him on the phone.
Henry all right, so Fonda played the same guy
so
every time?
With,
come on.
All right, so Stallone and Vikander and DiCaprio and
Larson.
And Larson. And here's the big question mark, okay? So from the moment I saw it, at the Hampton Film Festival in early October.
You saw The Revenant at the Hampton
Film
Festival?
No, I saw Spotlight. I turned to my wife after that was over, and I said, there's your Oscar-winning movie.
Of course you did, because that's what that movie says from the beginning to the end.
That's correct.
We are an important movie.
That's correct.
You must like us. You must anoint us to the Oscar. It's tedious.
No, it's not.
It's a good, very good, but not great movie.
I don't agree. What do you think of the movie?
I think Spotlight's fantastic. I don't think I wouldn't pick either of those to win the award.
What would you pick? Oh, you'd go with Mad Max.
I would pick Mad Max, Room, or Brooklyn over both of those. But
well,
I
Bill,
think,
so
but
Big
I
Short isn't a possibility.
I actually watched Big Short recently. I still don't think it's going to win at all, but I like that movie a lot more than I thought I would. But I don't think The Revenant is going to win
What
that.
Would you pick?
And what do you my personal favorite? All right, I'm going to freak you out here. I like The Big Short. I hope that kind of upsets everybody. I still like Spotlight. Yeah. But I this is crazy, and I don't know why this just entered my brain. Knowing Academy voters, what if they all went for The Martian?
That's just so not happening.
I think that Ridley Scott, I mean, the Scott was not the DGA choice, right? And I think that it almost always
parallels the DGA. Point. Best director, unbelievably, for the second year in a row, is going to be Alejandro Iñárritu.
Yeah.
And that rarely happens when somebody wins 2 years in a row, but he won the DGA, and it almost always mirrors that. So we all kind of agree it's going to be Iñárritu.
Well, we all kind of agree, except let me just, before we say the best picture, for sure. Let me just say that one of the things I'm hearing in the last 3 days, now everybody from New York that we know is out in California, and they're all talking to voters. And what they're saying is they're really the old white lefty and right are so pissed off about this new all of these new rules that they're not going to give Leonardo DiCaprio or Revenant or any of these new kinds of movies. They're going to go with Spotlight because that's the old important movie, and they're going to recognize Sylvester Stallone. But anything that reeks of new and young is out.
Well, let me tell you. Covering the Oscars, and by the way, I'm going to be live tweeting all night during the Oscars. First of all, if you're near a TV and you're in New York, I'm doing live updates on New York One all throughout the night and on Time Warner Cable, anywhere that you are throughout the country. But I'll be live tweeting on Talking Picks OD. That's hashtag TALKING, capital PIX, capital O, capital D. And I'll be live tweeting. So follow along and respond. We'll be watching your comments. But I will tell you.
That's practically a jingle, the name of that show and that tweet. I mean, it's so easy to remember, isn't it?
You know, we also
like
have
a personalized license plate on Venus.
We also, by the way, listeners to this show, we got to get the followers up. We have a Twitter. We have a Twitter page.
Throw us a bone for the love of God.
And it's called SA Talking Talking Movies. We have so many shows here. I got to sit around talking movies. It's called SA Talking Movies, and check that out on Twitter because we give you lots of inside information. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
And we had a guy. We have a new social media guy coming in. It was a lot of fun. So which brings me to Spotlight. Okay, so Spotlight, I thought, was a great film, and I think it is an important film. And despite what you're saying, McCuddy, about it crying out to be winning an Oscar, I think the cast is great. Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams, Stanley Tucci, Michael Keaton, Liev Schreiber, and, you know, it really the Boston Globe did an amazing thing. I mean,
they picked up the story that the Phoenix Sun.
Well, nobody read the Phoenix Sun. They brought it to national light, and when you look at the end of that movie, and it shows you all around the country where all those pedophile priests were exposed and the cover-up by the Catholic Church. And it also is a phenomenal film, you know, being in journalism, that shows you the inner workings of how investigative journalism works. When you look at that particular movie, you know, I work in a newsroom where you get a story and you got to turn it around, and a few hours later it's on the air. It was amazing. And that movie's like, well, what do you guys do here? Well, we have an undercover wing called Spotlight. What are you working on now? Well, we kind of look around and find something. We haven't found anything we like yet. Well, how long do you take once you find the topic, as long as it takes to do the story.
And we really need a guy to bring a box of evidence in and sit us all in a room and explain the whole thing to us before we really get interested in the story. And by the way, this is a box of evidence that he had taken to three other newspapers.
Did you like Spotlight, Pergoli?
I did like Spotlight.
Yeah,
I saw it on two avenues away. I saw it on 7th Avenue and 5th Avenue that very same day the Pope was actually in town while I was watching Spotlight.
Well, I'm going to say that Spotlight's going to win because of it's about something, unlike Revenant, which is just, I think they honor Revenant by giving it to Iñárritu for director and DiCaprio for actor. And
Spotlight
I hope
makes me wish there was an ensemble award.
Yeah, there is in the Critics' Choice Awards.
Wow.
But I hope you're right, McCuddy. I hope that. I mean, watching this thing every night, once a year, like for years, on that night, it's always, there's no surprises. And
this is the first year that has been wide open. Remember, it was Spotlight.
No, but
absolutely.
I hope what you're saying is right, that they just don't give it to DiCaprio just because it would make, and they don't give it to, Brie Larson, that it just becomes a different kind of show because it's just so predictable. There's an award season that goes on for months that by the time you get, it's a marathon,
movies.
I'm so thrilled when the Academy Awards is over because it's like I don't have to talk about these movies that I saw 5 or 6 months ago, and let's move on to something new. It's like we're still talking about these movies that I've seen in October or November.
I would be very curious.
And Brooklyn is my favorite movie.
And that passion that you're displaying now for the hatred of our business is really helping our listeners understand what's so important about being
a critic, what a comedian.
If the Oscars came first before all of the Guild Award shows, like how that might change things?
Well, that won't happen.
Well, it's never going to happen, but I just wonder how that might change the vote.
I think it would just, you know, there's just too many award shows. I mean, these guys have and women who make these speeches, I mean, if they win the Academy Award, it's like they're like, well, this is literally like the 25th speech that they've made, you know? I mean, we could go through all these awards groups. I mean, from the National Board of Review, the New York Critics Circle, the L.A. Critics Circle. I mean, there's award seats for all of this. Yes. I mean, the Critics' Choice Awards, the People's Choice Awards, the DGA Awards, the Screen Actors Guild Awards. I mean, it goes on and on and on. You win an award for this, the Academy Awards. I mean, it's like, okay, you know, do you give the same speech, or do you assume that the billions of people that are watching this haven't seen your other 19 speeches, the Golden Globes, or I don't know.
Neil, your doctor is calling. He's saying take the medication and just
Anyway, do we want to talk about Southbound before we say goodbye? Yeah, take it away, Perry.
Well, Perry should lead this conversation because she recommends
a horror, and she's a horror movie freak.
So this is on demand now. It's
I would only recommend it specifically for people who are into the genre, though. It's a horror anthology, and there's 5 segments. They all take place on a desolate highway, and, you know, all these crazy supernatural things happen, and there's, like, some slasher elements to it also. But this one is above and beyond the last one we talked about, Tales of Halloween, because every single segment
because
of it
everything is...
Well, everything is of a certain quality. They're all good enough, but one of them in particular is, like, above and beyond, and it's the one that David Bruckner did, and it's the 3rd segment in it, and it's about a man who tries to help a woman who got into a car accident, and I think he just does
And she's from the segment beforehand.
Well, I was
the segment beforehand.
That's not a spoiler. He runs into her and he tries to take her to
the
hospital.
I was purposely avoiding saying that because wasn't in like the actual synopsis. So I don't know.
I don't think you could spoil the movie because this movie sucks.
Stop.
I hated this movie, and McCuddy agrees with me.
If you watch any of Southbound, watch the 3rd segment.
I mean, it's Citizen Kane compared to Tales of Halloween. But
look, the movie failed. I didn't think it didn't engage me in any capacity. None of the stories. The story that you like, which was very gory, and I don't mind gory if I'm into the story. I didn't like the story, so I just found it to be kind of disgusting. And there's a segment that kind of dovetails the movie where they have these alien-looking monsters which really look cheesy.
Well, the problem with horror anthologies in general, like almost every single one I see, is that not a single one can figure out how to do a solid wraparound that connects all of the segments.
Yeah, I mean, this tried to do that, but a couple of them didn't hang together for me, and it really never really.
And what about the Donna Reed
not
family?
Supposed to explain,
I mean, you got that rote plot about the 3 girls.
I
they're part of a
band
that obviously was introduced by this. I don't want to tell
there's
too much.
There's 3 girls, and they're like this Donna Reed, Leave It to Beaver, Father Knows Best family. Goes, why don't you come on back to the house? And you got a flat tire, and you're stuck on the road.
But
and,
don't
you know,
eat the dinner.
They feed them this weird looking meat, and I mean, like the whole thing just went nowhere.
That
I mean, it was so predictable.
That was probably my 2nd favorite, and actually the transition between the 2nd segment and the 3rd segment is one of the best transitions in the whole movie.
Well, you're a horror movie fanatic, so, you know, maybe if you're a horror movie fan, listen to Perry because this is her wheelhouse of movies. But if you're just a casual horror movie fan, as the rest of us...
My 15-year-old daughter loves horror films. She started to watch it with me. She got halfway through and she was like, this is kind of gross and I'm done.
All right. Well, next week on the show, we're going to be talking about... I want to make sure that we've hit all the bases on this particular show. Oh, quotes. We were going to talk about quotes. Yeah. You were quoted on... We have a minute?
We have time you want.
All right.
You're in charge.
So let's talk about quotes for a minute. So quotes are very, you know... First of all, newspapers have kind of died. They used to be really after...
We were talking about this weekend, actually.
Yeah. So they've been, you know... They used to be years ago. I've been doing this for so many years. You got a quote. You got a quote for us, you know? And the quote would appear in the newspaper. And
when
most people...
When it was in rock, right? They, like, chiseled out the Daily Edition.
But, you know, there's the New York Times quotes and the daily paper quotes. Those are pulled predominantly from, you know, the review. But advanced quotes is you give them a quote. And why don't you tell your story about Eddie the Eagle? Because I think that's kind of indicative of how the quote system works. Although now they just are used in television commercials. I don't think the studios are spending a lot of money in print ads and quote ads that often, except for maybe the Arts and Leisure section of the Sunday Times or the LA Times.
Well, there's two types of quotes. I mean, obviously, the type of quote that I can get behind is when I write a review and then they write to me and they're like, can we get approval for these quotes? And they're all things that they pulled directly from my review. But then there's another situation where they specifically ask for quotes.
Which would seem like how it's done.
Which is when
or they ask for quotes, right.
You need to come up with something catchy, like something cheesy sounding and, you know.
A pun.
Because it's for TV, they want it really
Rocky
short.
Rocky is a knockout, you know what I mean?
Well, it's like
the Invisible Man.
Nine is a 10. That's the one I gave Larry King.
The Invisible. I gave one once that got picked up by Reader's Digest. I said, The Invisible Man is a must-see. You know, I thought.
Oh, and they used the whole thing, Reader's Digest. That's unusual.
They used
one of my favorite newspaper quotes that I ever got was for the movie Harry Brown with Michael Caine, and they put 4 stars. But, like, nobody has the context to know that it was, like, 4 out of 5 stars. For all I know, our scale was 4 stars.
Goes to 100. Maybe
you never know.
Remember, though, I used to fuck with them. I mean, I used to just send them, like, remember Breakdown, the thing with Kurt Russell and Kathleen Ann Quinlan, where she's a hostage? And then I said, Kathleen Quinlan looks great in the sack, because they had her in this giant bag. And, like, I would get these emails back, can we get a real quote, Mr. McCartney?
Then they come up
Loretta
to you
Milano.
And they say, like, we need something on, they give you, we need something on Stanley Tucci. Can you say something about Stanley Tucci in the quote? You know,
he's extremely adequate.
You know,
then McCuddy, Fox News.
And I'm like, no. Or then they've come to you and they've said, we'd like somebody to say this. And I'm saying, don't put words around.
No,
I'm not going to say this.
We had this conversation a couple of shows ago, I think, where I told you the Clooney Tunes for Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? This Clooney Tunes, Laugh Fest, blah, blah, blah. And they go, we love that. Could it just say hilarious? And I didn't say hilarious anywhere in the review.
Yeah, I know. Well, anyway, quotes,
crazy.
I think, right now, if you watch a quote, a commercial, the person that the quote is attributed to is in such microtype, even if you have like a 75-inch flat
screen TV. And that's if your name is even
you're Peter Travers, you're at home hitting pause and like gathering the family around and going, see? I don't know,
well,
Dad.
Well,
it
tell
really
your
look
Peter,
like you.
Peter Travers was, what did you say about Peter Travers?
I heard that he was hired by Rolling Stone, and in the interview they said, we want our name in the papers.
As much as possible.
Be quoted as much as you can.
Well, think of that next time you see a Peter Travers Rolling Stone quote in a newspaper. Here's what we're talking about. Next week on the show,
and it'll be Boffo.
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which is the new movie with Tina Fey and Margot Robbie about the real life adventures of a woman reporter in New York who was embedded in Iraq and in Kabul. In Afghanistan. In Afghanistan. And we'll talk about that. And we'll also talk about Creed, which is coming out on demand. And on DVD next week, as well as we'll take a look at all those Rocky movies. Which ones did we like? Which ones didn't we like? And some other stuff coming out on demand next week.
Including a little hidden gem that I saw over the weekend that you haven't seen yet, which is amazing, called A Girl Like Me. About cyberbullying.
Okay.
I want people to see that.
And we'll see that, and we're going to talk about Legend, and we're going to talk about The Danish Girl.
Now, Legend's an English movie.
All that and more next week on Sitting Around Talking Movies. Thanks to Sitting Around Talking Movies with us. For Bill Bregoli, Bill McCuddy, Perry Nemiroff, and me, Neil Rosen, thanks for listening. We'll speak to you next. We'll see you next. We'll hear
follow
you.
Follow us.
Follow us on SA Talking Movies on Twitter, please.
Nice.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Bill. Bye.
Cheerio.